This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, what we can learn from the debating champions of Central High School in Kansas City, Missouri. Central High is a school with a lot of problems. It's been labeled academically deficient. It's also been called dangerous daycare for teens. Two-thirds of its students do not graduate, but its debate squad regularly bests teams from top-ranked schools. Our guest this afternoon is journalist Joe Miller. He spent a great deal of time with the team as a reporter. Before long, he was acting as a mentor. Now he's a coach. He's also the author of Cross X, the amazing true story of how the most unlikely team from the most unlikely of places overcame staggering obstacles at home and at school to challenge the debate community on race, power, and education. Listeners, your questions and comments are invited. I look forward to hearing from you. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Joe Miller's writing has appeared in Popular Science, Vibe, and Poets and Writers magazine. Cross X is his first book. The publisher is Farrar, Strauss, and Giroux. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Joe, good afternoon. Welcome. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Sure. Tell us about Central High School.
Well, I first visited Central High School in 2001, and it was right when the state of Missouri had declared it academically deficient because of their high dropout rates and their low test scores. And I went there to do a story for a newspaper in Kansas City called The Pitch, an alternative news weekly, and the premise of that story was to follow some of the top students in that school around for a month or so to see what it's like to be a top college-bound student at a school that has such a low ranking academically. The school itself is really interesting. It's a $32 million facility. It garnered a lot of national attention in the 90s. Because it was part of Kansas City's very, very expensive desegregation plan, which was to build these amazing schools that would lure whites into the inner city and desegregate the classes. So Central has an Olympic-sized swimming pool, an incredible athletics facility, and back in the day it actually had a state-of-the-art computer network system in which each student would have a computer of their own. Now the school is, you know, it's this great building, but there's a lot of trouble going on in terms of how they're carrying out their academic mission.
Mm. So what were your first impressions when you arrived?
Well, you know, I have to be honest with you. I grew up in suburban environments, mostly in all-white communities. So my first impression was that I'd never been such a minority in a situation. That is, I'd never been around that many blacks at one time, and I had to at first battle my own fears or whatever around that had just come up from my being raised in segregated environments. But by and by, my impressions were that the school is not it's not as bleak a picture. Well, how could I say it? It's at once not as bad as it's portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
When we give it a title like academically efficient, but on the other hand, it's also worse than I expected. And that's because the problems in the school are deeper than they would seem on the surface.
Yeah. You say in this book that this whole thing for you has been a life-changing experience. How have your ideas, your assumptions about race and class changed as a result of the people that you got to know?
Well, I think I see America from completely different eyes, quite frankly. I grew up on you know, the white side of the racial divide, and we're still very much a divided nation. Kansas City is certainly a divided town. And I grew up on the white side of that divide, and from that perspective, there are certain things that look that you sort of take for granted and you assume are the norm or the way that you understand the way things are going. And when you sort of step across that line, which I did, I started to see, you know, just about everything from a different perspective. And I've become much more critical of our country, really. That's probably the short answer of it.
Yeah. When you first set out, you kind of had an outline for a story in mind.
Mm-hmm.
But then that changed. Where were you when you started out, and when and how did you begin to see there was another story to tell, a richer story?
Sure. Well, there's actually kind of layers of stories here. I think the book, it's sort of like peeling an onion, I guess, if you would say. I went in there, like I said, first to do that story for the newspaper about why the school is struggling. And that story turned out to be one about these very brilliant and gifted kids within that school that's struggling. In the process of writing that story, I found this debate squad, which, as you said, is nationally competitive. They routinely beat kids from the top schools. And that, I thought, was a fantastic sort of underdog story, for lack of a better term. It's a, you know, it's the kind of story that we all like, you know, an unlikely team triumphing over against all odds. But in the end, as I got involved and I sort of had this shift in consciousness and perspective that I was alluding to earlier, I began to see that rather than a story about, you know, a game of debate helping these kids to lift up, you know, and come out of their circumstances and sort of, you know, I guess assimilate to, you know, middle-class white culture, I see in these students a real challenge to us, to all of America, to see things from a different perspective, that their perspective is what we need in a lot of respects,
mm-hmm.
you know, to deal with some of the issues that we have around us.
Yeah. So in a sense, right from the outset, you said debate is good for these students, and then you started to realize these debating students have a lot to say to me and to the rest of us outside those settings, that school building setting.
That's exactly right,
yeah.
Yes. And I think debate is a great forum for that, because debate really is, it's essential to our society. It's certainly essential to democracy. And yes, it's a game that kids play, and they have played for years, but the things that they're doing in debate are things that we see all the time, you know, in national public radio or on, you know, of course we have presidential debates, but we have cable shows where people debate the issues and stuff. There are, you know, any political campaign or any drive to change some sort of policy is somewhat structured like a debate. We need to persuade the larger population or the people in power to do the things that we want them to do. So I think these students coming into this game that is so intrinsic to democracy and bringing their unique point of view to that game is very powerful and important, and something that really ought to be not only cherished but supported.
Yeah, and this is something that's going on across the country.
Yes, it is. It's part of a movement of, a movement is one way to put it. It's now an organization, but back in the mid-90s, some college debate coaches got together and started putting together ideas to bring debate into inner-city schools. Debate had disappeared from many of these schools, and they were theorizing that it would actually be a great tool that the kids could latch on to and get some of the skills that they'd need to do better in school or to go to college. And fortunately, George Soros, who's a great businessman and philanthropist, put some seed money down, and they were able to establish a network of about a dozen of these urban debate leagues around the country. Some of your listeners probably have connections to Chicago. Chicago actually has one of the strongest of these leagues in the country.
Mm-hmm. And Baltimore has one as well.
Baltimore, yes, and they were featured on 60 Minutes in 2003. toward the end of my book.
Yeah, and you know, you can see that report and other video about the Baltimore Urban Debate League on their website. And we've pulled an excerpt from a video they've produced that illustrates the power of debate and the power of the debaters and their ideas. And I want to play a clip from this video because I think in this we can hear a number of things that are happening. It's a kind of a montage is what we're going to hear. We can hear the commitment of the students and the people that work with them. We can hear the excitement, and we can hear that these students want to be heard. And I want to play this, and I also want to thank the Baltimore Urban Debate League for permission to play this afternoon. Some of the voices that we will hear here are some debaters: Drew Lawson, Iman Bickers, Tyrone Jackson, and Christopher Lay. We'll also hear the debate coach, Stephen Sprouse, and Pam She's the director of the Baltimore Urban Debate League. And then there are some other students that are unidentified. But let's hear this, because I want to share this with the audience so that we can give folks a sense of what's happening and what's all involved here. I think it's about 4 or 5 minutes long, but I think it's a really nice way to introduce our listeners to what this is all about.
I used to be the type of person that's easily angered, that gets upset all the time, and it used to get me into a lot of trouble.
Drew is a senior at Carver High School. Every morning, he wakes up at 5 to catch 2 different buses or the subway to get to school across town by 8 a.m. But it's what he does after school that truly sets him apart from other kids his age.
The experience of being on the debate team and being part of the Urban Debate League in general, I feel that I'm more mature about situations, that I can understand things and think critically in situations. In terms of opportunities and doorways that open up for you when you're part of this, it made me feel that I could do something with my life in terms of whether or not I'm trying to help my school get money or books, or whether I'm trying to go to college. The debate league is vital. It's like blood through your veins.
From the very beginning, I knew Drew was going to be a mover and a shaker on the team, but it seems to me that the debate has awakened something in him that has allowed him to express itself in ways that he didn't really make use of before. I've always felt personally that debate is such a wonderful vehicle for not only being able to express yourself, but to be able to exchange ideas. And if people can spend more time getting away from just what they think and be able to look at problems from multiple points of view, I think that's only going to make the world a better place.
Debate means everything to me. It just really opens up people, allows you to actually have conversations with people that are actually intelligent and actually focus on real world issues. That's just regular people who actually understand life and actually want to change something or want to do something other than just being at home on a Saturday afternoon.
Debate just like really moves me to like kind of puts me in like a different world or something.
The affirmative only supports the resolution by a series of steps that will supposedly happen after the plan is intact. And truly that plan is...
You can resolve problems in other ways besides, you know, always wanting to fight. You can do it like verbally, and that's what one of the biggest things that I've gotten from debate is that I can express myself verbally. Once you get involved and learn how to do everything, you'll love it. It would be the only thing that you want to do.
Debate has given me a sense of self-confidence. It keeps the brain warm, and you know, it keeps me thinking, it keeps me on my feet. There's something that's so inspirational about debate. When you listen to the radio or to the news, you hear about so many stereotypes of how inner city students are not doing good in school, and they're disrespectful, and they can never come together and assemble themselves in a coherent manner. And when you come to these debate tournaments, and there's like anywhere between 300 and 400 kids from all different grade levels, and you're coming together and you're not rowdy, you're making sense of things, you're debating together, and then when you debate, and if you lose or you win against a round, you don't carry a person, you come out the debate team and you're shaking hands.
In Baltimore City, debate is not only touching the lives of kids who are most at risk, it is turning them around. it's not just another after-school activity. It's a year-round commitment. Supporters of the program know it works. They've witnessed the determination. They've seen the accomplishments.
Having these countries suffer because of debt. Now, if we do this, then they don't have to suffer. We're getting down to the root causes. They said that...
Debate is just booming in Baltimore City. The school system has now asked us to try to expand our reach even further by starting a debate league in middle schools next year. So we're really excited about that. We're working with the school system now to teach teachers how to use debate as a tool in their classrooms and not getting kids actively engaged in the learning process. We're also getting our kids into a public debate activity in their communities where they're really becoming advocates for issues that they believe in.
Indeed, debate opens doors, creating many opportunities. The opportunity to think analytically, solve problems creatively, increase self-confidence, and build self-esteem. The opportunity to dream and walk through that door toward a future filled with promise.
Imagine that. Geeks graduating from Be More, but we're only geeks because we decided to actually read more. Debaters have commenced the revolutionary endeavor of our generation stepping up. Society expects us to fall, but we have evolved from silent, stricken infants to being outspoken, from backwards babbling toddlers to being debaters standing tall. All of this means nothing to those high-stepping prissy officials, so we must be bold like multisyllabic words on white sheets of paper because we were blessed with powerful mouths. Few, we will conquer the world.
And there you have it. That's an excerpt from a video that the Baltimore Urban Debate League has produced. Let's bring
that. That's incredible.
Jeff,
I haven't
Miller
heard that
Beckman
one before.
Yeah, their website is really something. It's a great place to visit. Now, on our website, there's a link, but a link to it. But if you put Urban Debate League into your browser or Baltimore Urban Debate League, you'll come up with some really fascinating stuff. So, what do you hear there, Joe Miller?
Well, the thing that struck me when I was listening to it was I thought, you know, instead of the word debate, isn't that what we would think education would be about? I mean, everything that they said, if you use the word education or school, aren't those the things that we would expect our education system to provide? I was so moved by that. Those are all the things that we want our students, our children, and our communities to have, to be able to step into their own, come into their own as people, find whatever calling they have in life, and to be excited about learning and challenging the world around them and that sort of thing. I was really, really moved by that. And I think debate, you know, I called it the anti-public education system in my book at one point, and I know that's kind of harsh, but, you know, it seems that public education has gotten away from really the spirit of what education ought to be about, which is, you know, to empower kids, to instill in our children this hunger for knowledge and to, you know, accomplish. And I think debate does that. It might not be for every student, but, you know, it certainly has for thousands across the country since these Urban Debate Leagues have started.
Yeah, yeah. Keeps your brain warm.
Yeah, I love that. They're such good writers too. That last speech at the end, just how, you know, the imagery and the very sophisticated metaphors that she used. It's just, you know, you don't get that kind of expression when you're just teaching to a test. I think you know, debate allows us to encourage students to find their voice and to make those kind of statements.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Joe Miller. He's the author of Cross X, the amazing true story of how the most unlikely team from the most unlikely of places overcame staggering obstacles at home and at school to challenge the debate community on race, power, and education. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments. I look forward to hearing from you this afternoon. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free 800 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Well, tell us about Jane Reinhart.
Well, she's quite a person. She's been running the debate program at Central High School for, this is her 11th year now. She debated when she was a kid in high school and in college. And she just always, it really stuck with her experiences in debate. And when she came to Central High School, it was actually during that desegregation period that I was talking about, where a lot of money was going into the school. She came determined to create a debate program because she loved it so much. And one of the things that just is amazing about her is that she didn't have any lower expectations at all. She didn't for a minute assume that these kids, because of, you know, where they're from or the circumstances that they're raised in, would not be able to succeed at the highest levels of this game that she loved so much. So that attitude really drove her and the students. I mean, she was right. The students responded and have reached the highest levels. She's also just a tireless advocate for the kids, and there's a budget for the debate team, but it's not enough for her, for her kids. She wants to give them every opportunity she can. So she, you know, will work baseball games and sell hot dogs at you know, the Royals baseball games, walking up and down the aisles or wrapping hot dogs or sweeping the floors or whatever, donating her time so that the money will go into the debate coffers. Just amazing person.
Yeah. At the outset of the story, we're introduced to a young man by the name of Ebony Rose, and he's a fellow who had been to a debate camp apparently during the summer, and he's one of Mrs. Reinhart's recruits. And he
right.
says to her, it's hard. The rules are hard. The game is hard. But she's not giving up. How does she get her students to begin to dig in and stick with it?
Well, I think a number of things. One is that one of the reasons why debate does so well, why it's so effective, is competition is part of it. And I think kids, all of us have this natural drive to be competitive, so she taps into that. She also, there are perks to being on the debate squad that are enticing to the students. The team travels around the Midwest to go to tournaments in Chicago or Des Moines and that sort of thing, and those, believe it or not, are quite exotic places to students from the east side of Kansas City who might not have ever even left the city. The opportunity to travel is a huge enticement. And I think those two things added to her tireless belief that they can do it and not accepting anything less, that's enough to get the kids to step up and go beyond, really, what anybody else expects of them.
Mm. As we mentioned, there are urban debate teams in cities across the country, and there is a National Association for Urban Debate Teams. It is the National Association for Urban Debate Leagues. It's based in Chicago, and Les Lynn is the director of the organization, and he's joining us now on the telephone from Chicago. Good afternoon.
Hi. Thanks a lot for having this show and for having me.
Sure. Tell us about your organization and how you help make this happen.
Well, the organization is, as you said, the National Association for Urban Debate Leagues, and we work now with 19 cities across the country. There are over 4,000 students in these cities that are currently competing in urban debate leagues. You know, many of them are very similar to the students, the wonderful students you had on from the Baltimore Urban Debate League, which is a thriving and an outstanding league, as well as Kansas City and the students that Joe Miller's wonderful book profiles. The urban debate movement, as Joe mentioned, is 10 years old, started in 97-98. And has grown, you know, steadily ever since as cities become aware that academic debate can be a powerful mechanism to advance the education reform agendas that so many urban school districts have adopted over the past 10 years. And so our organization helps, you know, facilitate those leagues coming into being. And over the last 3 years, we've helped begin leagues in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in Boston, in Austin, Texas. We're working with the Milwaukee New Urban Debate League in Milwaukee and in Miami. There's next month. There's a group of people coming together to begin an exploratory look into Dallas and the independent school district there, and starting an urban debate league there. So the kinds of experiences that Joe Miller documents in his wonderful book are increasingly common in urban school systems across the country.
And this idea of using debate, has it moved into other areas of the school building? I mean, can you find it? Excuse me.
Sure. Yes, indeed. There are a couple of references, I think, in the clip that you presented from Baltimore, that's a good example where the school system has said, you know, the engagement and the motivation and the initiative that students show in debate competition, in the fun of self-expression, and in the excitement of competition with ideas and with words, that those principles can be applied within the classroom. So we have what we call curricular debate components, and my organization has a number of those up on our website, which is www.urbandebate.org. And there are links to Baltimore and to the city and to the other leagues across the country as well. And we're actually engaged in an initiative to develop these further, so that more cities might be enticed to adopt these curricular components, because the fundamentals of debating are, as Joe said earlier in this interview, foundational. They're deeply historic, and they're ingrained in really the democratic process. And so, they're also intrinsic to our education system at its best. And really, what we are sort of coupled with in our organization is rediscovering the intrinsic value of discussing and arguing about ideas within the classroom, and then in this sort of, you know, this sort of competitive league that we model that we have as well, that so many kids respond to so well, and that has the brilliance of making learning at a very high level fun and engaging. So that kids, and we hear this all the time, and it's in Joe Miller's book, parents become surprised and almost astounded by the fact that their kids are now spending more time at the library and spending time at school or at debate tournaments on weekends, arguing about sophisticated public policy issues, and it's quite wonderful to behold, and we're, you know, greatly appreciative to Joe Miller, a journalist of his caliber, taking a close look at urban debate the way he does in the book Cross X.
Joe Miller, you had a question for Les Lynn?
Do I have a question for Les Lynn? I'd like to know a little bit more about if you're doing some of the stuff that they mentioned there in the Boston clip about engaging students in the community. That sounded very exciting, with sort of public debate components, or, you know, actually advocating for things in their own community. That sounds very interesting to me.
Yeah, and many leagues are. Baltimore is of course a great example of that. New York has a public debate component. They take debate into unconventional realms. For example, there's a debate program in New York that deals with incarcerated youth, There's a Rikers Island debate program actually, as Joe knows quite well, and as in his book Cross X, some academic debaters in urban debate leagues have begun to be to speak to community issues and issues of let's say urban youth culture within a traditional academic debate setting, which is an interesting evolution. It's an interesting influence. There's even a piece in Newsweek a couple few weeks ago that looked at the Seattle Urban Debate League and how they're enabling students in from urban schools to feel comfortable in kind of bringing into the game some of their cultural touchstones, rap music, for example, street poetry, for example. And that's a whole different, you know, kind of kettle of fish, if you will, in terms of its how it's changing the game, the traditional debate game. But I think in a broad sense it speaks to the energy and the vitality that urban debate leagues have really that's really marked urban debate leagues over the last 10 years, really.
Mm. Les, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
I appreciate the opportunity and appreciate if it hasn't been clear enough, Joe Miller's book is really something that your audience might want to take a look at. Cross X, it's a wonderful read.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Okay. Les Lynn, director of the National Association for Urban Debate Leagues. It's based in Chicago. He's the director of the organization. Let's take another call now, a listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I was very interested in this topic. This is a fascinating discussion, and I was actually calling about something that your guest just mentioned, the crossover between hip-hop music, rap music, and the debate culture. I was just wondering if you could elaborate a little bit on how those can interrelate and how the one can feed off of the other. So
sure.
I'll take
sure.
my answer off the air. Thank you.
Yeah, my book goes into that quite a bit. One of the main innovators in that direction is a coach at the University of Louisville. His name is Eddie Warner, and he's one of the few African-American coaches in the country. And he has a mission, or has had a mission for a number of years, to diversify debate, because frankly, even though we're talking about the urban debate leagues here, for the most part, before the creation of these leagues, you know, it was a predominantly white activity, and it would tend to be more wealthy, privileged kids. So he set out to do this, and over time, he developed. Well, first he would offer scholarships to students on his team, and got a more diverse squad. But over time, he began to take on issues of race and policy making more directly. And they decided to take the somewhat radical step of introducing hip-hop into the rounds as a rhetorical device to talk about how policymakers in Congress or wherever don't take into account the voices of those who are affected by those policies. So they offered hip-hop as evidence from the streets, if you will, the voice of the masses. They call them organic intellectuals, which is actually a scholarly term that was coined by a man named Antonio Gramsci in the early 20th century. So that's kind of where it comes from, and it's evolved since then. And I think in that piece that you played about Baltimore, at the end there was kind of a little bit of a, a hip-hop flourish to that young woman's speech. You're seeing that creep in, and that's partly why I think that these urban debate leagues are so important, the contribution that they make to the game and to our society, because, you know, like I said, debate is an essential part of democracy, and frankly, you know, debaters often go on to become policymakers. You know, they become senators and think tank people and lawyers and that sort of thing. So to bring those voices and those perspectives into this game, I think the impact is potentially huge.
Mm. Other questions are invited. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, we're talking about what we can learn from the debating champions of our urban areas. In particular, we're looking at Central High School in Kansas City, Missouri. Our guest this afternoon is Joe Miller. He's a journalist. He spent a great deal of time with the team there at Central High as a reporter. And before long, he was acting as a mentor. Now he's a coach. He is the author of Cross X. If you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question, give us a call, 333-9455. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Let's take another call, also from Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I would be interested in knowing how the debate coach sold the kids on this in the beginning. I can't imagine an inner city school bunch of kids being real enthused about this in the beginning. So I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Well, you know, she hunts them down, to be quite frankly with you. She'll look at test scores, and if she sees that a student tests at an unusually high level in reading, she'll find that student and drag him out of class and say, "I think you need to join the debate team." Or she has other teachers around the school who kind of know what to look for, and they'll point her in the direction of a certain kid. And then there's kind of a set sales pitch that she does she says, "You'll be able to travel with us." One of her best-selling things is you can make other kids cry, basically. And this is actually kind of a good point, that she basically says you can go to suburban schools and beat them in a game of wit and intelligence. And in a school like Central, oftentimes there's kind of a sense that it's us against the rest of the world, that, you know, our school is struggling. It has the stigma of academically deficient. There's this sense that, the rest of the world doesn't think we're as good as everybody else. So here comes this woman along who says, "Well, here's your chance to actually turn those tables around, and we do it all the time. Look at our trophy case." And it works.
Yeah.
Also, I think over time, you know, she's been there 11 years, so the squad really has some political capital in the school, at least among the students. It's one of the few sources of real pride in the school, because the athletic teams, frankly, aren't as good as they were back in the 60s and 70s and even 80s. The debate team is pretty much the only game in town, so there's some reputation there. And some prestige to being on the squad.
Yeah. I thought it was also interesting that you quote her as saying to these kids, you argue with attitude.
Right.
That's what this is about. You get to argue with attitude.
Right.
But there are rules. And here maybe you would talk a little bit, Joe, about what the title of your book refers to, Cross X.
Oh, sure. Cross X refers to the cross-examination period of every debate round, where debaters, there are two teams go against one another, two debaters on each team, and each debater gives two speeches. And after each debater gives their first speech, which is the constructive speech, a debater from the other team gets to question them about that. And those are actually often the most exciting parts of debate rounds, because it's not kind of the gloves are off, and it's the chance to get, you know, when the one team is interviewing the other, you're trying to put them in traps, and then the other team is trying to do the opposite and on the other team. So, and in slang terms, they call that the cross X period, the cross examination or cross X. And for me, I think, you know, on a deeper level, it's kind of a metaphor for what this team at Central has been able to do. They've crossed boundaries, really, that are in our society that divide us, and they've triumphed.
How are the debaters at Central High treated in the venues that they travel to? How are they treated by rivals? How are they seen by the other kids in a white suburb, say?
For the most part, with extreme respect and friendship, really. And I think that's one of the best things about debate. And there's a great deal of potential in debate in this area, particularly with the creation of the Urban Debate Leagues, that it is really one of the only venues where students from completely different, separated schools can get together and discuss issues for a set period of time. Granted, it's a competitive situation, but it's one of the only venues where, you know, without a lot of investment, you can get these kids together to do this sort of thing. And friendships have emerged, really amazing friendships that wouldn't have otherwise happened. Our students at Kansas City Central High School have friends at rural schools in Iowa, at some of the top private schools in Nashville and suburban schools in Chicago. They have friends across the spectrum. Now, granted, it's a competitive activity, and sometimes things get a little testy, and they're kids and that sort of thing. But that's to be expected. But I'd say for the most part, it's extremely welcome.
Mm. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Urbana Line 1. Hi.
Hello. You said that for the Central School that the teacher basically selected top kids. I'm interested if this is only done with top kids across the country, because it seems to me that this could possibly be a tool as well for the kids that
really need the help.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't want to give the wrong impression. That's one of the things that she'll look for is reading scores. But actually, it also says in the book, you know, one of her favorite lines is that one of the best places to find good debaters in a school, especially an inner-city school, is in the in-school suspension room. Honestly, there's a lot of potential for debate to help so-called at-risk kids, the kids who are acting up or, you know, having trouble with discipline, because it is a place where you can, as you mentioned, debate with attitude, argue with attitude, and that's often what kids are getting in trouble for, because they're, you know, talking back to the teacher or whatever. Debate allows you to do that and to be rewarded for it, and to, within that framework of contention, to actually do what we want you to do in school anyway, which is to learn, to do research and to write and all that great stuff that'll help you down the line.
Yeah, it's a way to stretch within some structure and some discipline.
Exactly. And there's an immediate reward system to it, too. You know, with the competition, the kids, it's not like, you know, well, I don't want to give algebra a bad rap, but we all sort of look back and scratch our heads, except for those of us who are in the science professions, and say, well, what was algebra all about? I mean, what did we really get out of that and that sort of thing? Well, with debate, the kids, you know, they don't have to scratch their heads and wonder what they're going to get out of studying and doing research. They know that if they don't, they're going to lose, and they want to win. It makes it more fun to, you know, to be in the game as opposed to getting, you know, beat.
Yeah, we got to wrap up here, unfortunately, but maybe you would tell us just a little bit about Ebony Rose and Brandon Dial and what they're up to today.
Well, Ebony Rose is at the University of Louisville on a debate scholarship, and debate changed his life, too. He is going to become a teacher, focusing in on the sixth grade age, which is a very crucial age in childhood development in our society. And Brandon Dial is now, he actually went to University of Missouri, Kansas City on a debate scholarship, but his grandfather passed away his first year, and he struggled that first year. But he has since moved into a paramedic training, and he's about ready to get his license in that area, and then he's going to continue on in school with a health administration degree. And move into that area.
Yeah. And Marcus Leach, one more student.
Marcus Leach became the youngest student ever voted student body president at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. He's now in his senior year and is investigating which law school to go into. I think we might see him in
politics?
Halls of power, yes. I do think that's possible.
Yeah. There we have to leave it. Joe Miller, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Joe Miller is the author of Cross X. It is published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. And our thanks this afternoon as well to the Baltimore Urban Debate League for permission to play that video clip this afternoon. And my thanks as well to our own Dave Dickey, who helped Harriet Williamson, our producer, and myself pull that off the web for us.